You need to introduce me more often. I like that. You know, for anybody that doesn't know, I've tried to make it clear that I've been kind of under the weather the last 3 or 4 days. I don't know whether everybody knows or not, but anyway, this bunch right here captured me today and stuck me and Suzanne in our van, and we went to Suwannee over here and saw the cathedral, an absolutely beautiful place. It just really a terrific place. Then they took me on a 4.5-hour drive to Bellbuckle, Tennessee. We got back before dark. I'm in the car with 4 Al-Anons and another Al-Anon in a truck behind us, all the way down there in the back. And on the way back, Helen said, somebody said, are you feeling better? And I said, well, somewhat. And Helen said, is it anxiety? And I said, no. And then we got back to the motel and I went in the room and everything. And I thought about what Helen said. And I said, yeah, I think it was anxiety. And no doubt about it. What a beautiful place. What a great place. I just appreciate you asking me, like so many others have said. It's an absolute honor for you to have asked me to tell my story up here tonight. I mean, it's just a terrific honor. Nobody was asking me that years ago. But before I get any further, I got to tell you that my name is Jay Dickerson, and I am definitely an alcoholic. And I am a charter member of the Temple Hills Group, meets in North Franklin, South Bellevue, and Middle Tennessee. It's the best group, May 8th. If you don't think yours is the best group, you need to do something about it. I can't ever tell my story without reciting the words to an old country song that my father-in-law, who passed away 3 years ago, and I've got to recite that just to keep that going. It said, it was a cool evening in October, and I was far from being sober. I was carrying home a load with manly pride when my feet began to stutter, and I fell down in the gutter, and a pig came up and lay down by my side. Well, we were talking of the weather as when good friends get together, when a lady passing by was heard to say, you can tell someone that boozes by the company he chooses. And the pig got up and slowly walked away. You know, I'd like to introduce my wife, Susie. Stand up, honey. She's the greatest lady in the world. We've been married 33 years by God's grace and the AA and Al-Anon for sure. And she's a wonderful lady. She's really my rock, I guarantee you that. And she means so much to me. But anybody that married the town drunk of Tampa, Florida couldn't be 100%. But anyway, I was born and raised in Nashville, Tennessee, and I took my first drink out on Highway 70-100 split. It was Nick Varela's barbecue out there, and if you could breathe fairly good, you could get a drink of beer out there, you know, a can of beer. And I drank 3 Country Club malt liquors one night and threw up all night just like I was supposed to. And I didn't drink for a while, and then fellow, I don't know if anybody ever knew Barry Greer or not. He's dead now, but Barry Greer sobered up a long time before I do, and he had to, or he would have died young. But him and I used to go out at the Harp of Nares, and we'd drink till we couldn't drink anymore and couldn't get home. You know, you had to stay. You sobered up. You couldn't drive home. And then things went along there. I was raised in a good family. I never felt like I fit in. You hear that in AA all the time, but I never did feel like I fit in. I didn't fit in no matter where I went. found out when I got to AA I wasn't supposed to. This is where I fit in with the people that I'm just like. And, you know, we come together in AA, people that aren't supposed to mix, and we tell the same silly old story over and over again and laugh just as hard as we ever did. And isn't that wonderful? You know, I feel like I'm right in the middle of where I'm supposed to be tonight, just exactly on time. Anyway, my dad was a periodic alcoholic, great guy. There was five of us, two boys and two girls, great family, good, loving, kind Christian family. And we all went our ways. I've got my two brothers and sister are just very close today. We spent a lot of vacations together, and it didn't used to be that way. You know, I hated them, hated everything. But anyway, we grew up and I got to high school, and God, I was ever in love with every girl I saw, you know, and I was in love with one girl, and she was in love with me and about three or four other boys, so I decided what I needed to do to join the United States Marine Corps, and I don't know why I did that, but anyway, that was my solution to that problem, and it wasn't a good move, you know. And I entered the Marine Corps as a private in 1963 in July, and I was on active duty for a year. And then I was in the reserves for about 5 years, something like that. And I entered the Marine Corps as a private, and my last meeting in Memphis at Millington Air Base, I was promoted to PFC. So... I mean, that's just the way it is. I got up to Lance Corporal one time, and we were at Camp Lejeune, and we went to Myrtle Beach for the weekend, and I got back on Monday, and they just want me back on Sunday. You know how that was. But anyway, I went through there, and I drank, you know, when I was in the Marine Corps. I drank. Everybody drank. When you wasn't doing something, you drank, you know. Drinking hadn't got a hold of me yet. But anyway, had already gone to college for a year and made all F's, and I called them and told them I quit, and they probably looked at that phone, said, I guess, you know, whatever. But anyway, I got out of there, and I studied hard, trying to go to pharmacy school in Memphis. And I had a mother that worked for the Board of Pharmacy, so I had a little political influence. And back then, they didn't check you as good as they do now, probably either. But anyway, I went to Lipscomb College there in Nashville, and I did real well and got into pharmacy school and went to pharmacy school down there. And eventually, I got a hooked up with, I went to school down there with an Al-Anon. Me and this guy stayed in this attic apartment, you know, and anyway, but I filtered to the sick ones, you know. You put 10 pretty girls up there, I get the sick one every time, I'm gonna filter toward the drinkers. So I ended up with a fraternity, and I remember the first night that alcohol became the friend I'd been looking for all my life is at a fraternity party, and they had all kind of liquor, and they had kegs of beer, and I drank, and I learned how to dance. Hell, I grew up in the Church of Christ. We didn't know how to dance. I learned how to dance immediately, drank all I could, you know, and fell down, busted my... And next day, they tell you had fun, and that's the way I had fun. You know, if you didn't remember what you was doing, you had fun. And that was the first time I realized that alcohol was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. It really, and I became a user from that day forward. When the first quarter I was in pharmacy school, I made straight A's. They thought I was the second coming of whoever started pharmacy back in Grecian days. But I showed them. By the time I graduated, I barely got out of there, and I'm sure some political influence helped there. But anyway, through pharmacy school, they also let you know that they got these pills you take, keep you up all night studying, and you get real smart taking them, but you don't learn nothing. But anyway, and you take them, and then you have to drink for 4 or 5 days just to get over it. Well, I did all that, you know. I got out of pharmacy school and passed the state board, and I immediately went to Florida and took their board. You had to have their take their test to be able to go there. You couldn't reciprocate. So I went to Florida and I took their board and passed that. And I had to wait a year before I could get my Florida license. So I come up to Nashville and started working, and worked at Lee's Apothecary. And John Lee in Nashville, greatest guy in the world, first class pharmacist, he made me wear a white jacket and had my name on there, stitched in there, you know. Kind of looked like a doctor, you know. And I always wanted to be a doctor. And anyway, me and this old boy, who became a dentist later on, lived out there on Harding Place, and there was a beer joint up the street there called the Steak Pit. We called it the Snake Pit. You know, it had old wood floors that they swept with that red stuff, you know. And had a pinball machine you put nickels in, and you drank beer, and you just hung out with people that you felt like you was a little bit better than they were, you know. But anyway, I just happened to keep that white jacket on so they'd think I was a doctor, you know. And occurred to me one day, and they did think I was a doctor, and I let them know, Helen, that I probably was at Vanderbilt, something like that, you know. I didn't tell them I was a neurosurgeon, but I hinted that way. You talk about embellishing stories, you know, my tour in the Marine Corps was not stellar, trust me. But to hear me talk it in them beer joints, you'd thought I'd landed on Iwo Jima with John Wayne. But anyway, I got in there, and it occurred to me one night with that white jacket on playing that pinball machine, what if they had an emergency on there? Hell, I guess I'd have had to go to the bathroom or something. But anyway, I finally, a year's up, and I had to go back to Florida, to Gainesville, to take the lab practical, and you had to go before the board, dressed up real nice, and answer questions. And so it was a big career move for me to get to Florida to do that. So I stayed at the University Hotel in Gainesville. Seemed like I heard somebody was from Gainesville here. But anyway, stood there, and I had a suit on, and I met this girl there. And I told her I'd live there quite a while, you know, I knew all about it. And I'd take her out and show her Gainesville. And, of course, I took her out, and I drank way more than I was supposed to. And next thing I know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm laying out by the pool in one of those cabana chairs in the only suit I got, and it's raining on me. And the next morning, I got to go before those board members. And the only thing I know is they must have all been Al-Anons because I passed. So anyway, I left Nashville. Things were starting to pile up. You know how they do. It pile up on you, and changing, moving to Tampa, Florida, I knew was going to be my solution to all my problems. You know, so I packed up, had a brand new Pontiac Catalina, light green. You know, cost about $3,000, brand new. I mean, I was fit to kill, boy. 1968, I drove to Tampa, drove down Manhattan Avenue, got me an apartment at the Imperial Apartments, brand new apartments, had a sunken living room, one bedroom, right out by the pool. I had a bunch of Merle Haggard records, and I'm sitting there, and I've got it made. I have arrived, boy, making more money than I ever made in my life. And I'm single, I don't have any ex-wife, children, nothing. And I hadn't been there a year, and I'm going bankrupt. I mean, if you've ever been to Tampa, they got Dale Mabry Highway, and the whole time I lived in Tampa was from 68 to 85, they were widening it. I don't know how wide that thing is now, but they're all, and back then they didn't use plastic barrels. They used these barrels with concrete in them. It took three or four trucks to lift them. I hit every one of them down there. I hadn't been there 3 months and there wasn't a smooth spot on that brand new Catalina. But anyway, I became the youngest store manager for Super X Drugs down there that they'd had in the whole state of Florida. I was, you know, the up-and-coming guy. I'd been there before, you know. I was a squad leader in the Marine Corps, and then I was a private, and I was the next coming in pharmacy, and then I was gone. And anyway, one day they all came in there and told me how good I was, and about 2 months later they was wanting to run me off. And I never got fired. I always quit right before they fired me. And I went to Brooksville, Florida, and worked. And anyway, finally got back to skirted around, and finally Super X hired me back. And that's when one day this girl, I used to date her cousin in Nashville, and she moved to Tampa. And she said, "Look this guy up." And she walked in that drugstore that first day I got back in Tampa. And my God, it was an instant meshing of neurosis, as Suzanne calls it. I mean, we fell in heat and love and everything else immediately. And it, anyway, we got married in 1973. And by this time, me and another guy were working in this drugstore part-time, and the owner killed himself. It was a real tragedy. But anyway, we were working in there, and we bought the drugstore a little at a time from these guys. And so we bought the drugstore, and Suzanne got pregnant right away. You know, it just happens. We bought a house on Gardenia Drive, 3623 Gardenia Drive, and we were about a mile from the drugstore, and went up there every day, and opened it at 7 o'clock. And I get there at 7 o'clock, it opened at 8, because you had to get the soda fountain ready, real old drugstore, soda fountain ready, and get all that done and everything. And the guys that we bought it from would come in there every now and then and just check up on it. You know, we're buying 10% a year. And Suzanne and I had moved that house, and we had little Cassie, who's a 32-year-old girl now. It's just a special lady. She's the reason she's so special is she's got two kids, Kate and Graham, and man, there's something else. But anyway, behind our house they had a grapefruit tree, two or three grapefruit trees in the yard behind our house, and I got one of those electric squeezers, and we started squeezing that grapefruit juice, and I think what you call it, salty dogs. We started making salty dogs. Nobody here has ever drank that stuff, I'm sure. But anyway, we were making that quite often, and anyway, in the mornings, I'd have a couple of beers before I went to work, you know, because you need to, you know. And, I mean, I've got that stressful job of saving lives, you know. And anyway, one morning I decided I'd have one of those salty dogs. Now, I don't know how many I had, but I must have gone into a blackout. Because I went to the drugstore, opened up the drugstore, got the fountain ready and everything, and Mark Curry, I can talk about this because the statutes have run out, but Mark Curry came in there just to check on things like he did, and sometimes he'd count the money, and that would save me some time anyway. But anyway, he came in there that morning, and I was all blacked out, and I'm kind of telling you what I think happened, really, because you don't know if you was in a blackout. But I was in a blackout. But anyway, he's starting to ask me if there's something wrong with me. And I couldn't tell him. You know, I tried to tell him, but I couldn't tell him. He kept asking me, and finally I just showed him I passed out. So I come to, he calls the doctor. Anyway, Clyde Tyner's my doctor. He's Al-Anon. He wants to see me. And Suzanne picks me up. And she's pregnant with Jonathan and got Cassie. And we go to Clyde Tyner's office. And I tell him the truth. And I tell Clyde, you know, I had some vodka and grapefruit juice that morning. And he said, well, you shouldn't drink in the morning. That's the last of it. And he put me in the hospital, put me in Tampa General Hospital. And we were, at this time, I was raised in Church of Christ, and Suzanne's Catholic. And so we were going to a community church. And so we went to this community church, and they put me in the hospital, and they started running the test on you. I don't know whether there's got to be a couple of you that have been in the hospital having those tests run on you. You know, they start at one end and go through the whole deal, you know. And they were running these tests on me, and I was kind of a medical mystery. They couldn't find anything wrong. But anyway, after a couple of days in the hospital, we were leaving the hospital, Suzanne and I and Cassie. And we're walking out, and we're in the lobby of Tampa General, and Dr. Tyner comes up and says, go back to your room, we found something. So we went back to the room, and he came in, and he said, you have an aneurysm in the brain, and we're going to have to operate. And he explained all that to me and everything, and that's a pretty serious deal. And so all the church people started coming in there praying for me, and I was kind of beginning to like that, you know. And I was thinking about my brothers and sisters and all of them, how they had mistreated me all those years, and now what are they gonna do? Me laying there dying on them and everything. And anyway, I went in there for about two or three days like this. All those church people coming in there. And finally, the radiologist and the doctor, Dr. Tyner, came in the room and closed the door behind them. And Suzanne and I were in there, and they were kind of sheepish looking. And he said, your x-ray got mixed up. This old boy in a car wreck. And there's nothing wrong with you. And anyway, they let me out of the hospital. And I can laugh about that, but just think about all the people that I owed amends to. My Lord. And it never occurred to me till I got into the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but the lives that, what does it say, like a whirlwind, like a tornado, we run through the lives of others. And boy, hey, I'm guilty. But anyway, we got out of there, and things were starting to go south. You know, we were going to this church, And finally, I got in there with the preacher. Suzanne went to the preacher, so I went to the preacher. And we sat down, we talked to him. I talked to him, and I told him we talked about drinking too much. Well, he didn't know anything about alcoholism, and I sure didn't know anything about alcoholism. And so we decided that I was drinking too much. We never did decide that I need to go to AA, that I need to quit drinking or anything. I think he probably decided I need to quit drinking, but I didn't hear that. So anyway, I got home that night, that afternoon, and we poured out all the whiskey. And then I went to work that night. And between the time I got to work and the time I got off, I convinced myself and Suzanne that a couple of beers would be okay. And so I stopped at market on the way home, and I drank beer for a while. And Suzanne was kind of critical about me drinking beer all the time, and so I switched to wine. And wine's a little bit more sophisticated, more first-class drink, you know, until you start buying it for $2.79 a gallon. Then it purged Susan jars, Bay to Bay liquors. And, you know, it's funny. I had a lot of customers and didn't know it. They were in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were coming by that drugstore, and some of them were friends of mine. And they were kind of starting to take bets on how long it was going to be before I got there. I didn't know that until I got in AA. But anyway, things were going south. I went to the preacher, and we really, he and I got on our knees together and prayed. And it was the most sincere prayer I'd ever made to that time. It was a prayer for God, turning my will and life over to God, doing the right thing. It was sincere as it could be, from the heart. And then I told you, I started drinking beer, and then I switched to wine and things like that. As sincere as it was, I didn't have any information about the disease of alcoholism. And so anyway, we were on Gardenia Drive, and I remember one time I was babysitting my little son. He was about 2 years old. Suzanne had taken cash at the grocery store or something like that. And I'm out there about half coming to and waking up and passed out and screwed up on that wine. And I can't see Jonathan anywhere. I run out the front and he's walking down the street, 2 years old. You know, that's the types of things that'll scare you to death. But I still kept on drinking. Those were the things that, you know, you'd think would make somebody wise up a little bit. Anyhow, we stayed there a while. We started a Bible class at our house. And we were sitting in the living room, and then I kept that wine back here in that bathroom hidden behind a few bottles. And all during the praying and everything, I'd go back in and get a little nip. Before it was over, I was sitting over in the corner about half passed out. I remember Lanny Erickson would take up for me. He said, well, he's got such a high-pressure job, you know. And he's just, and then his wife was a nurse, and she said I had narcolepsy. I'm telling you, all you got to do is be around these people, and they'll make more excuses for you than they ever knew. I remember we was eating at that place over there in Clearwater one night. Lanny and Gail were with us. My head was in the food like it always was. And she's talking about that narcolepsy and pressure job. That was awful. But anyhow, we decided to do something to really, that neighborhood wasn't where we wanted, you know. And we needed a new house. And there's a house over there on Watrous. It's in a lot better section in Hyde Park. And it was near Pete Maureen Knight. He was a heart doctor there in Tampa. And they were good friends. And later on, they were the only friends we had left in Tampa. But so we sold our house on Gardenia and moved over on Watrous. Well, when we sold that house, we had a garage sale, and we had it on the day before Memorial Day, 1979. And I managed the cash register, and Suzanne handled all the selling and everything. And I'm drinking that 279 wine, and in and out of oblivion, and arguing with people, just made a fool of myself and embarrassed her and everything. Well, the next day was Memorial Day, and both my partners were out of town in North Carolina. And I opened that drugstore up, and Suzanne called crying, saying she's going to leave me after that debacle of the day before. And I said, oh, honey, don't do that. Look, I'm going to close this drugstore up and come home. I'm going to go join AA. Well, her daddy had been in AA since 62. Many of you knew Mo Hollering. But she didn't know nothing about AA, and I didn't know anything about it. And I don't even know why I said that. You know, it didn't ever occur to me to go to AA. But anyway, I closed that drugstore up, and it never opened on Memorial Day after that. I don't know what happened. But anyway, I came home, and I told Suzanne, I hugged her. She was crying. I said, you know, I'm going to go to AA. So I called. It was a holiday, Memorial Day, so the intergroup wasn't open, so they sent me to the Yana Club. And the Yana Club is on MacDill Avenue, right up next to a railroad track. And a train comes by about 7:45 every night and disrupts the meeting. And you just wait and then hang on to it and start up after the train goes by. But anyway, I went by on Gandy Boulevard and went by the ABC Liquor. and got me 3 or 4 miniatures so I'd be able to face these people. And I walked in there, and the president and vice president of AA were there, Ray Huff and Jack Johnson. And Jack took me back there in the back room by the pool table where the literature was, and I found out later there's a lot of controversy over that pool table. But anyway, we went back there, and I bought a big book, 12 and 12, AA Comes of Age, a 24-hour book as Bill sees it, and a handful of pamphlets. And I told Jack I had a friend that had a drinking problem. And I was kind of wanting to help him, and I gave him a check, and he took it. And I never did understand that, but anyway, I got home and showed Suzanne I joined AA and put those books in a drawer and got her off my back. I went to a couple of meetings, too, I think. I'm pretty sure I did, because I've got 3 that they were giving out these white chips that were kind of pressed board, like cardboard. You could write on them, and I've got about 3 of those, and I must have gone to a couple of meetings and picked one up. But anyway, that was May 31st, 1979, in between there and my sobriety date, September 26, 1979, or thereabouts, was the horror story that I don't ever want to forget. That lonely, sick, sick, lonely drinking that you and I know all about. The Al-Anons know about it, and you and I, alcoholics, we know about it. That drinking where you just pass out and wake up, pass out and come to, and you're drinking to live and living to drink. And anyway, we lived on Watrous this time, and we had a garage separate from the house. We had a 74 Chrysler New Yorker, had everything on it, everything you get on it. And Suzanne would get mad at me, and that garage was wooden. It was a white frame wooden house, and the garage was separate with a little tube shed, and it was wooden. And she'd get mad at me, and she'd take that car and run it up in that garage and scrape the sides of it with wood sticking out there. And I'm telling her story now, but I've always liked it. Then a day later, she'd feel guilty and get out there with, what's that stuff? Anyway, some kind of wax to smooth out that car so it wouldn't look bad. I forget. Liquid gold, that was it. But anyway, and I had a 69 Oldsmobile Cutlass. And trust me, there wasn't a smooth spot on that thing. And we were in a high-class neighborhood, and I guarantee the neighbors were hoping that I'd get into some money and buy a new car. I mean, it was awful. I remember being drunk one time, and I couldn't get the hood open because I had to add water or something. You know how drunk the car gets drunk, too. But I like to beat that thing to death getting that hood up there. I mean, in this high-class neighborhood, gee, Lizzie. But anyway, we're living on Watrous now, and I kept a bottle in that back tube shed next to the garage. And I began to come to about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd have to go out in that back tube shed and drink that vodka and go back upstairs and pass out. By this time, I don't know whether you know any pharmacists that are in AA, but if you find a pharmacist that's in AA and they say they never took any medicine back there, they'll lie about other things, too. I took it all. And when you take that stuff, you have to take other stuff to back it up, you know. Yeah, you just stay sick. And I was taking about, the time I got to AA, I was taking about 30, 35, 40 Percocet a day, washing it down with hot vodka. I remember one time I'm on MacDill Avenue. I'm parked in front of a radio shack, and it's uphill kind of, so the back end of the car, front end of the car is way up. And I'm busy street, and I'm, of course, the cornerstone of Venter Bay and Tampa by now. You know, people look up to me for everything. And I'm in that car, and I'm half in and half out, and I'm trying to take six Percocet, and they had run out of Black Russians pre-mix that I was getting, so nobody would know I was drinking. And I got some pina colada. Don't ever try that. It's just too late. But I could not get those pills down with that pina colada. Every time I tried, I threw it up. I never bought pina colada again. But anyway, that's the sad, sick situation I was in. And anyway, one night, Suzanne was just going crazy. You know, I had a desk of my dad's, and you pull out the drawer over there, and it's got bank statements, 3 or 4 years old, never had been opened. You know, I was so screwed up. We only dealt with money when the checks bounced. You know, chasing people all the time. I made the same amount of money as my partner, and he was building swimming pools. And so things were going south. One night, I get up 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going out that back shed. Anyway, evidently I end up on that couch, and I'm smoking and watching cartoons, whatever you do at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I go back up and pass back out in bed, and all of a sudden it's Sunday morning, and I'm going up there taking a shower, fixing to go to work. I'm just dying on the vine. I'm telling you, it was just a sick drinking. And you and I understand. But anyway, evidently I dropped a cigarette down in that couch during the night. And that thing started smoldering. Well, downstairs I hear Cassie and Jonathan and Suzanne screaming. There's a fire. And I run down there buck naked, and I bought one of these Amway things, powder. Sprays powder and put fires out, and I sprayed that all over that den. I mean, kids crying and just crazy, you know. And we had that couch for a long time. We reupholstered it, and that was our drunk couch that reminded us where we came from. Finally, a few years ago, we called the Salvation Army, and they wouldn't even take it. But anyway, that was kind of a turning point for me. That's where it hit the fan. Suzanne went out in the car, and she found a bunch of pills and empty bottles and all that stuff, and she confronted me with it. And she called Pete and Maureen Knight, the only two people we knew, and that were friends at all. And Pete was running a drying out place at Memorial Hospital. And they told Suzanne to call me and just be nice to me. Well, that was kind of weird. But anyway, I came home and I admitted everything. You know, I admitted I came clean. And I talked to Pete Maureen, and he and I'd been taking all these pills, and I figured I was going to just go crazy withdrawing. So he gave me some pills to take, and Suzanne was doling them out to me. And somewhere in there, I came to AA during that week, but I didn't know quite what was going on. But anyway, by Friday, I said, Pete, I need to go to that drying out place. And I had called my father-in-law. He was working at Cumberland Heights, telling him, I said, first of all, they put me in that drying out place. And I was there about a day. And I go in there, and this counselor is showing me this Jelinek curve. Anybody know what that is? I'm sitting there looking at that thing, and I know I don't know what he's talking about. All I know is they're going to send me to some loony bin, and they're going to tie me to a rocking chair with a bed sheet, and I'm going to be up there the rest of my life till the insurance runs out, and Suzanne will be off somewhere else. But that's what I thought treatment was. So Anyway, a guy I'd met in AA, Don Martin, he come up to bat here on me, smoked a pipe, and didn't know how to say anything except everything's going to be all right. And said he'd been sober 17 years. Anyway, he came up to the hospital and they were going to send me to Brookwood Lodge in Kissimmee. And he said, why don't you try AA for 28 days? And I said, oh, yeah, I'll do that. So I called Suzanne and she picked me up and we began the journey of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, meet me at the Tampa Heights group tonight. And Suzanne drove me over there. And my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, there were 12 of us in that meeting tonight. Me, Don Martin, and Suzanne. There was Ed Orr, who had been sober 35 years. And there was Julian Lake, Bern Rigby, and Vi. And there was Father Ed, who was Episcopal priest. And there was Mary Ann and Billy. And Billy was Eleanor and Billy. And Billy was Eleanor's Down syndrome boy. He's about 25 years old. And he came to that meeting more than anybody. And anyway, my introduction to AA that night was I sat there and I sat next to a guy named Fred who had been sober 2 weeks. And I figured if Fred could stay sober, I could stay sober. And those people, they told me I had two chances, slim and none, boy. But I was so sick I couldn't hear too much. But I'll never forget Ed Orr taking me after that meeting. And he sat me down and he said, we care about you and we love you and we want you to be okay. And if you'll keep coming back and listening to what these people will tell you, you're going to be okay too. And ever since that time, after I got any type of walking around since, I felt like that was my obligation in Alcoholics Anonymous. When that newcomer fell through the doors of AA, I need to let them know everything's going to be okay. That if you'll just do what these people are telling you to do, just like I did, then you'll be okay. I know Franklin Williams was a big part of this roundup for years, and I didn't know anybody knew Franklin Williams in Tennessee, but I mention this a lot. One Friday night, they had an area meeting in St. Petersburg, and Julian and Byrne picked me up. You know, they didn't ask you nothing. They just pick you up and carry you somewhere. And I was afraid not to go, afraid they'd kick me out of AA. But anyway, they carried me over there, and this speaker was speaking, and he told his story, and he laughed more than the audience. But they had talked to me about surrender. And he told this story that's meant so much to me. I couldn't figure out what they were talking about, but he's talking about he went in this market down in Mississippi, and this guy named Red McGinnis walked in there, and he said something smart to Red, and Red knocked him down. He gets back up and says something else, and Red knocks him down again. The third time he knocked him down, he stayed down. He unconditionally surrendered to Red McGinnis. And I said, that's it. That's it. I understand. And that's a funny story, but that's the way AA works. You know, and my father-in-law, who many of you know, who is the greatest guy in the world, the night I sobered up that Sunday night, I called him all night long, every hour on the hour. He was in Tennessee. And I said, my God, Mo, I owe $10,000 to the IRS, blah, blah. He said, if you don't drink, you won't get drunk. And he hung in with me all night long. Then he contacted my sponsor, kind of interviewed him, make sure he was okay. But anyway, Franklin gave me that. And from that, Mo had a poem that a lady named Georgia gave him that meant a lot to me, and it means a lot to me today. Said, I sought my God I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me, and I sought my fellow man, and I found all three. And that's what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. That Tampa Heights group, those 12 people in there, that's where I got the message. That's where they gave me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They loved me with enduring love. There was no judgmental attitude to anybody. I came in there, and there was nothing but love and hope, and they wanted me to be okay. And that's the exact same love that I found with the God of my understanding. God loves me just like that group loved me. And that's something I never understood till then. You know, Bill said I could talk for a couple of hours, so and I never know what I'm going to say when I get up here. You know, Suzanne and I went to the room. We asked God to speak to us. And so, you know, if you don't like his talk, it's the only one I know. But anyway, we got sober in Tampa and became very active. And Suzanne hated Al-Anon just like she's supposed to. And her Al-Anon sobriety date's May 1980. And she finally surrendered to all the people I'd been telling to call her. You know, you got to do that. You got to call her. I'd be okay if my wife had straightened up. But anyway, that, you know, there's so much to tell and so little time to tell it. But that song she sang at dinner tonight, that ought to be the AA fight song. God, you and I have so much to be grateful for. Good Lord, I didn't have nothing here. Everything I've got today is a result of sobriety and the program and fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I've got, I don't have anything that I didn't get right here. And anyway, we stayed sober, and Suzanne's brother got killed in a car wreck in 1984, and we got involved, and I got to be closer to her parents, Mo and Jackie. And anyway, we sold our drugstore in 1985 and moved to Nashville. We moved to, and that's where the Temple Hills group started. My sponsor was giving me instructions before I left Tampa, and he said, there's not a group in your neighborhood, start one. So I've just followed instructions. We started Temple Hills group. Anyway, we started that group, and we did fine there, and then kids went to high school there, and did fine in AA, grew in AA, and finally our son got using drugs and alcohol when he was 16, and he's 29 now, and he's in jail right now, charged with murder. And I tell you that to show you the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and the God that we found. Boy, I hate to do this, but anyway, in the year 2000, he stabbed himself and tried to kill himself 37 times. And we were in the trauma unit at Vanderbilt Hospital for 10 days, he was. And you couldn't stir the people with a stick. They immediately had a round-the-clock watch on Jonathan, the people in AA. They put that together. We didn't have to open our mouth. We didn't have to do anything. They just handled everything. And we dealt with that. We dealt with treatment centers. I mean, we've been down the road with that. But all during that, the power of God and the grace of God has been there right where with us. Those two guys back there, Stafford and Mike, and their wives, and Judy, and these people have hung in there with us, holding us up when we couldn't hold ourselves up. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I believe when I came in here, God's grace brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. It brought me to the Tampa Heights group. It brought me to the people that God wanted to show me his wonderful grace. And all I had to do is respond in some small way. And I guess the way I responded, just like all of us, is I said, God, thank you so much. What do I need to do? Franklin Williams said it all the time. keep it simple, and follow instructions. And that's what we've done. Suzanne and I, she buried her dad. We buried him 3 years ago, and her mother in September. And then this thing happened with Jonathan in October. So we've been kind of beat up with life's situations here lately. But, you know, the thing we have to understand, the thing we do understand, we hold on to each other. The thing we understand is we're not the potter. We're the clay. And, you know, you know how uncomfortable it is when you get out in front of a bunch of people and you just can't even talk for thinking about the love in these rooms and the people that mean so much to you and the gifts of sobriety. And one of those gifts of sobriety is, you know, a year and a half, Bill asked me to talk up here. Well, we didn't know at the time that we were going to be involved in all these other circumstances and everything, but there's no mistake that we're here tonight. There's no mistake that you're here with us tonight. There's no mistake that Milton and I only met yesterday. We've been talking all summer long trying to sober up one of Suzanne's cousins. You know, they're Catholic. And I fought them for years, and I finally joined them about 10 or 15 years ago. But Milton and I have talked all summer trying to help Pat Thrower down in Savannah, Tennessee, and it's kept me and Milton sober, I guarantee you that. But that bond that Milton and I have, that, I mean, we just met each other, and I love him like a brother. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. And all it is keep it simple and follow instructions. It's, we've got a beautiful daughter. She's 32 years old. She was 4 years old when she came into AA. We've got a great son-in-law and two little grandkids, Kate and Graham, that just think she hung the moon, I guarantee you that. And they like old Papa, too. But they're over at the house all the time, and that's results of sobriety. The thing that I can't say enough for also is Al-Anon family groups. Were it not for Al-Anon, Suzanne and I wouldn't be here tonight. She's got a sponsor named Millie in Al-Anon. And Millie kept bugging me after this incident with Jonathan happened, and I met with her over at the AA club, and we talked for 2 hours. Then on Saturday after that, she talked to Suzanne and I for about 4 or 5 hours. And Suzanne and I are on the same page. And that's an absolute miracle. There's a lot of families that get split up through problems like this. But it's making us stronger. And I remember I called Stafford right after this happened. And Mike had already been to his office. AA is anonymous, but everybody knows everything. Bill, you've been such a great host for me. I've met so many people. I thought I was an old timer until I got up here and saw people with 40 and 50 and 30 and all this sobriety, you know. Of course, when you have problems in your life, you too know that you feel like a newcomer. You know, I remember I'm telling you years ago that an old timer, somebody won't go to their home group, but they'll drive 100 miles to talk. And I hadn't been to my home group in a month. But I love AA. I love you people. I appreciate you listening to me. I appreciate you having me. And there's nothing like me standing out here loving you like I do and you loving me back like you do. Thank you.